For November 10th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Podcast episode 199. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, always, a co-host of the show, front-end dev, super cool Floridian, Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Hey, I'm super cool. That's freaking phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. So today we have a pretty phenomenal topic for 199.
Absolutely. WordPress versus Drupal.
That's right. Emacs is
better.
Kind of
scary.
We're just throwing down the gauntlet and having a flame war. The good old-fashioned WordPress versus Drupal. Which is better? What is better for different kinds of things? I mean, the communities are different.
And the content models, the differences in community, etc.
Well, of course, Drupal is going to be better, right? Because we work with Lullabot. Lullabot primarily is a company known for doing Drupal web projects, yeah?
Yeah, well, anything we touch is better, yeah.
Of course, right? So this WordPress thing is just, you know, this might be a really short podcast.
It's a flash in the pan, right?
Well, the internet is not going to last but 5 years. And to describe why that is, we have a few guests with us today.
Coming up first is an agency and community engineer at Pantheon, previously from Palantir.net, Steve Vector on Twitter, Drupal.org, and GitHub. Also, Drupal Haikus on Twitter. Used WordPress back in 2006, 2007, but has been doing Drupal since. Welcome, Steve Persh.
Hello. Great to be here.
He's also given like a DrupalCon talk that included a bunch of haikus, if I recall correctly.
I did. It was plug-in haikus back in 2013 at Portland.
It was entertaining and informative.
That's the idea. Yeah, I haven't been doing many Drupal haikus lately, but there are still a bunch on that feed.
So also we have agency and community engineer at Pantheon. He comes from a WordPress background with over 8 years of experience specializing in WordPress. He's worked on large sites like AMC.com. Network? What is network? Is that different?
That's just the AMC, the TV channel. Oh, Some people think like the movie theater.
But. Oh, AMC, the TV channel network. I gotcha. So he's worked on AMC.com, the AMC TV channel, and Frito-Lay. He's A Taylor Me. He's A Taylor Me on Twitter and GitHub. Let's welcome Andrew Taylor. Hey, Andrew.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's a good thing we can edit these things. They actually sound smooth when we actually do it, huh?
The next person is a developer and educational Partners International, cross-functional WordPress and Drupal developer. Started in Drupal in 2006 and working with WordPress since 2009. Uses Drupal for work, WordPress for work and hobby, and maintains multiple WordPress plugins in the public repo. Daggerheart on Twitter, Drupal.org, GitHub. Welcome, Jonathan Daggerheart. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
So it sounds like we're setting up, Mike, you and I have been doing Drupal for a while. Steve has the experience doing both. Andrew and Jonathan has some WordPress experience. So we have some so-called experts on the line today.
Yeah. So let's kind of start this off with what type of site would you use Drupal for versus what type of site would you use WordPress for, and where is that overlap?
Yeah, I'll jump in. So I'd answer this question a bit, and what I tell people is whether you are making a content site or, like, is the data you're storing primarily about content or is it about data? And I know that's a murky line, but if I was recording a lot of different data points and I needed to math that data later or easily query that data, it's Drupal just due to the database structure. I know this is the cliche, but if I'm making a blog or a content-rich site with lots of words and images and stuff like that, then WordPress is a pretty good choice.
So for every field, we have a new database table in Drupal. How do things get stored in WordPress? How does that work?
WordPress generally stores everything in a single table called the post meta table. As far as the non-body or title for a post. So what you end up with is an index key value store, so that you'll have the post ID and the key, which is like the field name, and then the value for that field, all for all content throughout the site in a single table.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, what are your thoughts on like building a Drupal site versus building a WordPress site? I don't know. Do you have any familiarity with Drupal?
I do, since I joined Pantheon.
Okay.
You know, Pantheon done both, so I've dipped into Drupal a little bit, seen some of the awesome stuff in Drupal 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree that WordPress is more content-oriented. If you're working at content-heavy sites, it's good for customizing the experience for folks who are entering that content, where after the project launches, they're going to be, you know, adding new blog posts and new content daily. You really want that experience to be optimized once the development is done.
So you're talking about more like the editor's user experience.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. If you're a lot of like publishing sites, like AMC had editors in there, mm-hmm. every day cranking out new content. And once our dev cycle was over, we would sprint for like a couple weeks, but then they're in there doing stuff every day. So it was really more business critical to make sure they had a good experience.
Yeah. So I got to tell you, like, one thing that I've always heard coming, you know, being a Drupal developer, is I've always told people, like, listen, you know, if you're if your content is more important than your processes, you know, your logical business processes that you're putting into the website, use a content management system like Drupal. And if the processes and the architecture is more important, then use maybe something custom, like, I don't know, like a custom build out with, I don't know, Symfony or Laravel or something like that. So it's kind of interesting to hear Jonathan say that kind of the same thing almost, but instead of like Drupal and a custom framework, we're talking about WordPress and Drupal. So, Steve, you're a long time Drupal developer, short time WordPress developer. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that with Drupal, there's a greater degree of flexibility from the point at which you're starting. When I was working at Palantir, I think my coworker at the time, Larry Garfield, liked to say that with Drupal, you're building a content management system. Often the end product that gets built for the client is so customized that it may be somewhat unrecognizable compared to a previous site, that the way the content gets modeled, you might end up with very different workflows, very different administrative experiences, very different user interfaces that you wouldn't see in the WordPress community.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like I've done plenty of work, you know, especially on the admin interface of various different websites, where you're moving around the fields, you're moving around everything to make that user experience better. You know, grouping fields and you know, adding custom fields and such. So it's interesting to say. I think that WordPress has a reputation of being better from a user, from that content editor point of view. And Drupal, you know, especially going back, you know, with Drupal 6 and, you know, the default out of the box installation with Drupal 7, it looks like crap coming out of the box. Drupal 8 makes a big change in that. Does anyone have any thoughts? Is that still true? And as an additional topic here, like, what about like when you add in, say, multiple plugins or extensions? You know, I've heard before that, you know, extensions can clutter up the WordPress interface, and I don't, not being a WordPress developer, I'm not sure if that's true or not.
I think that is true to a degree. WordPress has kind of a what they call the settings API, where plugins or themes can register in their own settings page, and at that point, really outputting the HTML and the CSS for that page is on them. So you'll get a variety of experiences. Some will use like tabs, some will use a giant form, just kind of all over the place. Recently, there's been a big push for the WordPress customizer. This is something I've been trying to get more people using and get out there and spread the love on that, because it has a consistent framework in core kind of coupled with a live preview. So it makes a lot of those administrative screens have a more consistent user experience because all the controls and everything are output by core rather than just being whatever the developer decided to do.
Does somebody have any sort of experience with that that might be able to metaphorically explain what that means in Drupal land? I'm not sure I followed.
Sure. So the customizer is WordPress's kind of, I guess, it's I'm trying to think of the right way to put this in Drupal words, but it's kind of that approach where it's about the it's about the content first. So we're doing this whole outside in approach where you're sort of working from the front end. Is similar to what the customizer tries to do in that it opens up a sidebar in your browser with all the settings that are registered in the customizer. And to the right, you see your website. And as you edit those settings, ideally your website updates. And so you see all of that live and you don't necessarily even save those settings until you like the results and click save.
Interesting. That's really neat. But as far as one of the things, if I can hate on Drupal for a minute, is, I mean, I heard it was mentioned that, you know, WordPress has lots of different plugins and they provide many different administrative experiences. And I would say that that's the same experience for Drupal as well, right? For you're using panels, for example, and that's a totally different thing from anything that would be normal in Drupal core.
Yeah, but I think panels is kind of, you know, there's a couple special snowflakes that are just big overarching, like, modules within Drupal that that need to have a special interface because there's nothing in core that can do that, right? And you know, panels comes to mind. When views was in contrib, that came to mind and stuff like that too. But by and large, like a lot of Drupal modules, they'll add functionality onto, say, like the core interface, you know. So like if you add a field formatter, now, like say like a custom date or a geolocation field formatter, when you're creating your field on your content type, now you just have an additional dropdown. You don't have an interface specifically for that. You know, when you say like add the flag module, that flag module like is integrated into views and it's integrated into the views user interface. So when you go to like, you know, add that into views, it's where you would expect it. It's not, it does have its own, it might have like its own admin interface where you specify global options for that. But even that is generally styled in, you know, it'll be styled by the admin theme, by 7 or whatever admin theme you're using, you know?
So what you're saying is that in Drupal, you're creating systems that work together as opposed to just here's a system, work with it.
Yeah, and I think part of that is a function of that Drupal modules can depend on one another, which isn't a capability in WordPress. So you can have a module like flag or like panels, depending on C tools, there can be an expectation that modules in Drupal build on one another in ways that aren't present in WordPress.
So as a WordPress plugin developer, you can't set a dependency for a different plugin. Is that correct or no?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Not reliably.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty interesting. You know, like, so when I was doing like a little bit of research for this podcast, I was watching a presentation from Twin Cities Drupal Camp, and there was a screen, and I put a screenshot of it in our notes here, and they were talking about different options and how with Drupal there's typically like one or two community accepted options, but within WordPress there are like a whole bunch. Like for example, like what I'm looking at here is like there's evidently 182 event calendar plugins, 143 forms plugins, 518 gallery plugins, 42 CCK fields plugins. And so it could be argued, but that's a good thing. You know, it gives your WordPress developer a whole bunch of choice. But at the same time, my thought is, well, how do they know which one to pick? And if they're trying it out, do they have to pay for it?
Well, a lot of them it's like the Forms plugins I have a lot of familiarity with. A lot of them go with that freemium model where it's like, here's your little introduction, like limited feature Forms plugin. And if you want, they call it repeaters, but if you want a field that has, in Drupal terminology, unlimited values, then you're going to have to upgrade to Pro. And if you want a fancy date pop-up field, that might be an add-on that you purchase for another $5 a year.
So wait, we've just now introduced the idea of purchasing your plugins. That's something that isn't normal in the Drupal world. Let's talk a little bit, if we could just get an overview about paying for WordPress.
Yeah, and paying for this. I'd like to talk a little bit about the theme ecosystem too. Andrew, can you give us a quick overview of like how the theme ecosystem and paid plugin ecosystem works within WordPress?
Sure. Well, there's WordPress.org, which is kind of similar to Drupal.org, and that's kind of the official place where you upload themes or plugins, and they fairly recently added kind of a commercial component. So you can sell themes that might be premium, where in the past they were restricted to free-only resources. But there's still a ton of third-party sites out there that kind of sell things on their own or do it outside of the official marketplace. And really, that's kind of the Wild West. It's a tough conversation to have with some clients about, like, hey, you bought this $29 thing on this random website and it's not working, it's not well developed, it's not well maintained. So there's a lot of research that has to go on, and I kind of think of it similarly to, you know, if you have like the App Store for, you know, maybe your Mac or your phone or whatever, and you buy something official through there, then you can trust that it's going to be fairly well supported and there's going to be some guarantees behind that. But if you go and buy something off a third-party website and install this random piece of software, you're kind of rolling the dice with what you're going to get.
Well, I'm not a big city lawyer, but WordPress is GPL, right? So how are they doing that? Like, how are they making the premium model work?
A lot of folks, what they do is they don't sell the software itself, but you'll buy, like, pay a yearly fee, and that includes a license and updates. So if you pay...
What is the license for?
The license is what allows you to receive support from the developer. Okay. So a lot of them, if you're, you know, don't pay for it, you'll really just be posting to forums and kind of hoping someone answers your question. But if you pay the, you know, $29 a year or whatever their fee is, then you get access to like a premium support. If they roll out updates and things like that, there might be some premium features that unlock kind of that going back to that freemium model.
Gotcha. Now, I've heard this before, but I don't know if it's true. I've heard that if you have like a freemium plugin and or it expires or you don't pay for it, that certain WordPress developers will actually put like some type of Nagware or ads or something within the plugins within your admin screen. Is that a thing?
That is a thing. And again, that goes back to using the official repository versus getting something from a third party site. Items in the official repository kind of have restrictions about being able to opt out of some of that stuff and things like that. Whereas if you get something third party, they can kind of do whatever they want.
It makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about theme ecosystems. Like, one of the things that, in my opinion, Drupal really lags behind WordPress is just the availability of the themes. So my understanding in WordPress is that a theme in Drupal is not the same as a theme in WordPress. You know, a WordPress theme can contain functionality. Is that right? Can someone explain that?
Yeah, I think in the WordPress community, there's a wider range of expectations for what theme means. Mm-hmm. WordPress does have sort of Zen equivalents, where there are themes that are meant to be as stripped down as possible, and they'd be very recognizable to Drupal developers who work in the mindset of there's one tool set for building out functionality, and then this theme tool set is meant for visual styling and markup. But there's also this other end of the spectrum where, especially with premium or paid themes, there's an expectation that the person is really buying an entire website, that the theme includes the functionality, includes the styling, and those are somewhat positioned as competitors to tools like Wix or Squarespace or Weebly or any number of software as a service website builders.
So you might be building like, or you might be buying like a WordPress real estate theme that it includes right. your presentation as well as all of the functionality to build your real estate website.
Right.
Yep. And some themes will even, you know, work with plugin developers. So if there's a plugin that hooks up to like real estate MLS feeds and they have a pro version, they might team up with somebody who's selling a premium real estate theme, and that's bundled with it. When you buy the theme, you get access to that plugin that handles the MLS stuff as well.
Whereas Drupal would try to keep your content and your presentation separate. If you were to build that within Drupal, you would use feeds or migrate or something to get batch imports of your MLS data, put that in the database, and then theme it in a way that is pretty or useful or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Sure.
I think at least in the contrib ecosystem, Drupal has a clear split between presentation and functionality. But I imagine if you looked at most complex WordPress site buildouts, you'd have a very hard time drawing a clear line between here's where our logic and functionality stops and here's where the presentation and styling starts.
Well, and to be fair, it wasn't until Drupal 8 where you couldn't write PHP. I mean, you could write PHP yeah. in template files.
Exactly.
Like, here's my database query to show me this list of things in this template file, which was totally frowned upon, but, you know, turned out it worked okay for some people.
Yeah, got the job done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's I think it's interesting that this can touch on some other points we were talking about with dependencies. So if a theme really wants a slideshow, well, then you can expect that theme to come with the plugin, some slideshow plugin shoved into the theme, like the actual plugin itself. And so you can end up with the splintering so that you could go download super slideshow. I'm making this up, super slideshow from the repo. But you also might buy a theme that comes with super slideshow, but the one that came with the theme is now like four versions behind because the theme maintainers don't update that. It's really interesting. And you can end up with, if a theme tries to do everything, you can end up with a theme that is the whole website, but then it's that theme's update process that is responsible for updating those plugins that were packaged with it.
Gotcha. So let's talk about updates and maybe security. So my understanding is that WordPress can kind of auto-update itself. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Just magic, like you're running your website and all of a sudden it's got the new version?
I believe the auto updates are limited to security. I mean, as far as the ones that will push themselves or actually trigger their own update are generally limited to security updates.
Yeah, okay. And those are usually minor like point releases. So if like WordPress 4.6 came out and then they have 4.61 and 4.62 that are security releases, those are going to push, but they're not going to push you to the next major version.
That makes sense. So is that something that, I'm assuming that's something that's configurable. You can turn on, you can turn off, like if you're running obviously a version control system, right?
Yeah, there's a constant you can set that will disable that. And then also obviously if your production site doesn't have writable files or things, that auto update is going to have a hard time.
Yeah. And so that's something with Drupal that you cannot do is update. Have an auto update. I know there's been talking. You know, there's been a couple issues within the core issue queue about having some type of functionality that does that. That kind of emulates WordPress. You know, for some of the smaller sites out there. The thought is though that in order for that to work, obviously you do have to have a writable file system, which introduces a number of new security vulnerabilities. So there's kind of a give or take on whether that would actually be more secure or less secure. And
that's been a regular conversation at Pantheon. Our live environment is not writable. We think it's a fundamental security problem to allow a live website to rewrite itself. So we just don't allow it. And with the Drupal community, that was never really a question or a pain point. But when we added WordPress support a few years ago, it was a regular question with the WordPress community where there are plenty of professional developers who do expect to be able to leave auto updates on and get the perceived or real security benefit of security updates automatically instantly being applied to the live environment. And Andrew's actually been working on an alternative way to do it, where he has a continuous integration script that applies updates in one of our multi-dev environments.
Yeah, and I think running updates on the WordPress side is kind of, I don't know, some people like it, some people don't, but if folks enjoy the convenience in WordPress's commitment to backwards compatibility, that if they can run updates without having to set up a staging server, do a long drawn out workflow for maybe like a single developer or even a user that isn't as technical to set up a staging site, and they get that benefit for a year and then they get, you know, hacked or something one time and they have to clean that up for a week, then that's might be worth the benefit of not having to maintain all that other infrastructure for the rest of the year to go ahead and clean up the mess for a week and roll back a backup.
Makes a lot of sense.
So is the idea of don't hack core, which is kind of the Drupal developer's mantra, does that exist in the WordPress community?
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so there's the set of WordPress core files that you don't touch because that's the kind of thing that could get updated and you know, makes that process a whole lot easier.
Correct. And even with theming, WordPress has the idea of a parent theme and a child theme. So a lot of premium themes or things you download, you can create a child theme from that. So if you customize CSS or do anything of that sort, maybe add an additional template, then when the main theme updates, your tweaks are going to be kind of in a safe spot and they're not going to get overwritten when you run those updates.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about the differences between Drupal and WordPress, but for me, starting at Pantheon about a year ago and working with the WordPress community more, my main reaction was that the differences had been greatly overblown in my mind. So I started in WordPress about 10 years ago and then shifted to Drupal. And in my time in Drupal, I thought WordPress is this different thing, different community, different all around. But especially going to WordCamp US, basically the DrupalCon equivalent, my main takeaway was that the communities are incredibly similar. The problem spaces that the CMSs try and solve are incredibly similar. And we have much more to learn from one another than divides us.
All right. And with that, we'll take a break and then we'll come back and talk about community and similarities between the two systems.
Hello?
So, hey, it's CEO and co-founder of Lullabot, Matt Westgate. How you doing, Matt?
Good. Hey, Matt. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, we're here to talk about Tugboat. Tugboat's a product that Lullabot's been working on over the last, I don't know, how long has it been? A couple of years by now, right?
Yeah, I mean, the project originally started in 2013, I believe. There was a client that came to us and wanted a way to be able to get changes to them quickly, to see the dev work, to see things as it's being built, and chugga chugga tugboat.
So it's a pull request builder. So a whole environment gets built up when a pull request happens, so that lots of people can then see the changes and have their opinion heard, that kind of thing. How's it work?
That's the idea. So, you know, you're working on a feature, you're working on a change, and when you're ready to do the pull request, Tugboat jumps in, builds a whole environment. It takes care of the hosting and everything for you. So it builds out a full working version of the site. It returns a URL. Oftentimes, just in a GitHub comment, it'll update the GitHub comment with the URL. You have that. You can pass it to your stakeholders. You can pass it around to people who need to sign off on it. And what it really does is it lets stakeholders connect to the development process in a way that they haven't been able to before. Oftentimes, you just take screenshots or, you know, of like, do you mean like this? Do you mean like this? And now, since it's a URL, they can click on it anywhere on any device and they can interact with the change and actually give feedback as the project's being built. It's pretty cool.
Ever since DevOps became a buzzword, this is kind of the kind of tool that has, you know, been developed as the new hotness. But Tugboat has some features that are really neat.
Yeah. So on top of being able to see the changes as if they were in production already, we have a couple fun tools along with it. So one is every instance, every preview environment has a command line interface. So it's not blocked off or walled off from developers. They can actually go in and see what's going on and have terminal access to each of the builds, which is pretty cool. But the latest feature that we rolled out is visual regression testing. And what that is if you have a bunch of builds, if you have a bunch of preview environments, we take a snapshot of the site before, and we take a snapshot of the site after, actual image or a picture. And so you can see, without even clicking on the builds, the before and after of each thing. So that's pretty cool to be able to have a visual snapshot of what the site looks like for a quick reference.
It's bright colors, and you can see that, oh, this particular section got shifted over 7 pixels, and it's totally different now.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to make the development process visual, you know, and include not just developers in the feedback process, but your whole team. It turns out your whole team can provide the voice of QA and feedback, and just everybody feels more integrated in the communication loop, and it makes the whole workflow more smoothly. So by the time that you get to that big 2 week, you know, or 2 week sprint cycle for the show and tell of all the features that are signed off on, everybody already knows all of the features that are going to be rolled out. It's no longer this daunting, like, 2 hour call where there's so many different changes and adjustments that it felt like you didn't make any progress. We take that, we have those conversations as they happen. And so that 2 week sprint cycle, that show and tell at the end, everybody's already engaged and knows what they're about to see.
So if somebody needs more information, they could just jump right over to the website, right? What is that?
Yep, it's tugboat.qa, and you can go there. You can learn more about Tugboat. Reach out, contact us if you have any questions, and we'll be happy to help.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
All right, welcome back to the Lullabot Podcast. We're talking Drupal versus WordPress, because Drupal is way superior, right?
Drupal versus WordPress!
Drupal has a song. like the Drupal community is so excited about Drupal that there was a song, like the Drupal song, right? Drupal,
yeah.
Drupal. There can't be a WordPress song, is there?
Yes.
What?
Yeah. Actually, this is, I don't know if this is funny or interesting, but the first WordPress song I heard was like a cover of a Lord song. And that actually got me into Lord. I'm a Lord fan. I'm admitting it for the first time on your podcast.
He's a geologist from Colorado, you know.
Oh, really? Yeah, but, you know, communities of creatives, I guarantee there are many WordPress songs.
Right on. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So there are definitely differences within the communities, right? I mean, I guess Steve was maybe saying that it was kind of more overblown. So, Steve, if you don't mind talking, what you found when you went to WordCamp, and, you know, tell me about the WordPress community that you found coming from a Drupal background.
Sure. So the first session I went to was a day before conference summit of sorts of core contributors and a lot of people really active in the WordPress community. So some of the topics we discussed were, can WordPress.org move to Git or perhaps move development over to GitHub? And I thought, boy, this sounds familiar. I heard a lot of conversations about code best practice and a lot of conversations about how to make events better. And I was just thinking, all of these people seem very familiar. A lot of the personalities that you encounter in both communities are very familiar. There are a lot of people, I think, in both communities who started in one career and ended up managing the website for either the academic department they were working in or the arts organization that they were working in or whatever field it was, and that brought them into web development. And you have a number of people who started in computer science very young and are interested in the most complex technical topics.
So it sounds like there's a lot of similarities, but one thing that I think I understand is different is you talked about core development. Like, isn't core development for WordPress really kind of handled by one company and they do what they want?
So I think both communities have a similar perception question where there's a big fish company in both communities that is sometimes perceived as controlling or strongly influencing core development, Automatic and Acquia, and both companies actively fight against that perception because neither company truly controls the project in question.
Yeah, the project is GPL, so you can fork it, as certain people did.
Are there popular WordPress forks?
What about BuddyPress? I've heard of BuddyPress. Is that a fork, or is that just like some type of, I don't know, similar to a distribution, or what exactly is that?
It's like a super plugin, so it's like organic groups meets, a buddy list, and it's a social media plugin that does a lot of different social. Like back in the day, I don't know if how many of your clients said, "I want a Facebook of car dealerships or whatever."
Yes,
it's a plugin that tries to give you all of that social media functionality in a single packaged plugin.
Maybe can compare it to Drupal's Open Social these days, huh?
Yeah.
Which is a distribution, right? A Drupal distribution. Yeah. That's the word I was trying to come up with.
A distribution from a couple podcasts ago it's a social network that you can build out your own kind of internal or external community organizing type stuff.
Well, that's one thing that I think WordPress is lacking is the idea of a install profile to make a distribution or something like that, right?
Yeah, certainly that's something we've seen at Pantheon. We have this concept called custom upstreams, which when we implemented them were very much meant for things like community distributions or if an agency has their own internal distribution. So COD gets handled as a Pantheon custom upstream, and
COD is
Open
the
Atrium.
Community organizing
distribution. I assume.
Yeah. Which yep. is, I know that in the past, like DrupalCon, the website was run with a COD install. So, sorry.
Yeah. So to my knowledge, WordPress doesn't really have that concept of a distribution, and I think that that's possibly somewhat a function of plugins not depending on one another. So if plugins can't depend on one another, then you don't get an organizing mechanism where you have this tree of plugins or modules coming together to build a coherent product. But as we were saying earlier, there's still themes that may bundle a lot of plugins, but to my knowledge, there isn't the community-oriented distribution concept.
Makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about like community events. I've been to one WordCamp before, and many Drupal camps and many Drupal cons. Let's start with you, Steve, and then kind of maybe move over to Andrew if you've been to any Drupal events. But like what is your perception of WordPress events from a Drupal developer?
Mostly that they're very much the same. The same kind of topics get discussed, the same kinds of sessions. One difference that I would like to see brought over to Drupal is the track of sessions for people using the end product day to day. If you go to a WordPress event, you can go to a whole track of sessions on how to write the best blog posts, how to convert your series of blog posts into a book, all kinds of sessions for people who are using WordPress day to day as their content management system. And that's something I've almost never seen at a Drupal event, a series of events or sessions meant for the people actually using Drupal as their day to day content management system.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Andrew, have you been to any Drupal events?
I have. I went to DrupalCon New Orleans this year. It was probably the largest one. And I really liked that it was developer focused, but that's because I'm a developer. Mm-hmm. And so as Steve was saying, it might be like out of place or kind of excluding some other folks who use Drupal, but WordPress often has multiple tracks and will cover things like business or content or design. And I've even been to camps where there's not dedicated tracks, but the talks are pretty fragmented. So even within the same room, you'll have a design talk followed by a development talk, and you kind of have to pick where you want to go. And if I'm there to learn all about development, maybe only half of what's going on in the day is going to be applicable to me. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because there's the hallway track, right? You can go out and if there's not a session you're interested in, you can network with people and make some new connections. So I think that's something that might be useful at Drupal events, but then I would also like to see some WordPress events, you know, maybe a couple a year that are strictly, this is a development only event. This is a content only event rather than having all the camps be fragmented.
Gotcha. Jonathan, you've been to both Drupal camps and WordCamps, I believe, right? Well, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I echoed Andrew. It's definitely Drupal events tend to have sessions that are significantly developer focused and the future of what development is going to be like in Drupal because changes happen so dramatically. Whereas WordPress, you can absolutely show up as a designer or just a blogger and learn about writing good content and just having running a blog as a business. It's very different. You'll have as little as you know, four or five sessions for developers, and it'll be things like using PHP Storm. Whereas in Drupal, you'll have four or five tracks for different types of developers.
Yeah. So I wonder, like, how that would even look if, say, like, at a Drupal camp or DrupalCon, you know, like, Drupal's, I hear you guys talking about, like, you know, sessions for WordPress users, but most of, like, what I'm hearing is blogging, you know, which is, like, that whole, you know, cliche that WordPress is just for blogs. But, like, If you're building a blog, you're pretty much not going to use Drupal. I wonder what that would look like. I know at Drupal cons, you know, they have the summits. Like, they have a media summit. They have a higher ed summit and stuff like that. I think that's kind of analogous, but I'm just kind of thinking out loud right here.
Yeah, so I guess I'm kind of thinking like an SEO topic. You can see multiple SEO-related topics for how to write search engine-friendly content. And I don't know that I can remember seeing one of those at a Drupal camp that I've been to. I'm sure they're there.
But. Yeah, they're definitely there. I can think of a couple. And I remember back in even 2012, I gave a talk on one. But yeah.
I think it's somewhat of a chicken and the egg problem where WordPress has both groups, developers and end users, and they also have a reputation for a product that's friendly to end users. With the Drupal community, we don't have those people in the room, and we don't have a product that has a reputation for serving them well. I don't know if we can address one before the other or if we'll have to do both together.
Since we're developers, I want to talk about developer experience real quick. Since, you know, Drupal is all focused on the developers at Drupal events, let's talk about the developer experience of WordPress compared to Drupal. What's it like to build a WordPress plugin these days? I don't know. I've never built one.
I maintain a few WordPress plugins. And
right on. In public, or are they paid, or what kind of?
Yeah, no, I have public plugins that are in the .org repo, and I also have plugins that are just available on GitHub. And okay. It's really interesting and sort of difficult to develop a plugin well for WordPress in that there aren't these APIs that interact with each other. So you have an event system that you can subscribe to and register your hooks with, but ultimately, so I have a crummy views clone that I made for WordPress because WordPress needs views desperately. And since there are 143 roughly different form and field related plugins, the way for my plugin to integrate with all those other plugins that might create fields is that I have if else statements. You know, it's like, if this plugin exists or this function exists, then I have to go learn that plugin's API and how to display that field output the way that that plugin does, as opposed to there being a field API in core with a standardization in data storage and output. So It would be ridiculously difficult to write a plugin that plays well with every other plugin, if not impossible.
Well, I think that's where the extensions have come into place, right? So WooCommerce is WordPress's kind of e-commerce solution. And there might be an event calendar plugin, and then someone can buy an extension that links the two. And so you see a lot of that because it is difficult to maintain. So people have started, you know, monetizing, just building those bridges.
So it's kind of like glue code to glue together two modules so they can interact with each other.
Yeah, exactly. So if I've bought, you know, plugin A and plugin B and I want them to play nice, maybe I have to buy this $5 add-on that's going to make them sync up.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. So if I'm developing a WordPress like field plugin, do I store that in a different database table, or does it go into the post table or meta table, or how does that work?
For the most part, they all go into the core tables. There are some plugins that will create their own tables.
Mm-hmm.
And WordPress kind of has a database API that you can use for that. But for the most part, they're within the core tables.
As far as building a WordPress plugin, it's all procedural, right? Procedural PHP?
Not necessarily. Because it's PHP, you can write whatever kind of PHP you want. There are plenty of WordPress plugins that use object-oriented programming, and in different ways. I went to a WordCamp session arguing against object-oriented programming, but the argument seemed to be positioned against object-oriented programming, where object-oriented programming meant you take all of your procedural functions and then you make one giant class that has all of your functions as methods. And I thought, well, yeah, if that's what you mean, don't do that. So that told me that there must have been some WordPress plugin that did that and called it object-oriented programming. So you can find a whole range. You can find that sort of thing, and then you can find plugins that are more well-structured. Andrew, I know you've been working on a Solr search plugin lately. What's the code structure in that one?
Yeah, that is object-oriented. And I think it really depends on the complexity of the plugin. You know, or you're doing something like building an e-commerce, it's going to be very complex, and having an object-oriented code base is going to be useful for long-term maintenance. And I think there's a lot of plugins out there that maybe started simple and have grown, so they can kind of be a mixed bag.
Is WordPress core itself object-oriented?
No, there's a lot of procedural stuff going on. There's, you know, some classes you can call. Like there's a query class to kind of fetch content from the database and things like that, but they're more of one-offs.
Sounds similar to Drupal 7 then, right? Mostly procedural code, a database abstraction layer that's object-oriented.
Yeah, but I think with even Drupal 7, the minimum PHP version was 5.3, and I think with WordPress it's still 5.2, and that changes what can be expected in terms of object-oriented structures. So if you're trying to build a WordPress plugin for every site that could be running WordPress, you're going to have to target a much lower PHP version. And actually, I think I've heard of WordPress sites still running on WordPress 4. So I'm actually not certain what the minimum official version of PHP is.
You mean PHP 4? Right?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, PHP 4.
Wow. Yeah, that comes into the whole security thing. I can't, you know, that's like running Internet Explorer 7.
Andrew, you've built some big sites. I know that people talk about, oh yeah, Drupal's what you want to use when you're building a big site or a complex site or something. But with AMC.com and Frito-Lay, those weren't necessarily small potatoes either.
No, there is an enterprise space for WordPress, but I would say it's more of the 20% and not the 80%. So, you know, there are some really awesome things going on, and those enterprise type sites are what are driving the innovation in the enterprise space. So the REST API, for example, was driven and contributed to largely by folks who were doing enterprise projects.
Tell me about WordPress's REST API. I know nothing.
Sure. So WordPress's REST API kind of came out in the first batch, just introduced the infrastructure but you still had to register your own endpoints and things. And WordPress 4.7 is in beta right now, and it introduces some default endpoints that come out of the box with Core. So if you write a blog post, you know, there's an API endpoint that you can go fetch those posts and things like that. And so it kind of took a tiered approach, but just getting the infrastructure in allowed people to open that up and, you know, use WordPress as a backend, so someone can come in and enter content. Like I heard a great talk from the New York Times that they went in and people were entering content in WordPress, but then they're pulling that in through the REST API into, like, you know, a mobile app or wherever. So it allows it to be kind of a content entry piece in a larger kind of infrastructure you have going on. So one cog in the machine.
Sounds a lot like decoupled Drupal.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds exactly like decoupled Drupal. As a matter of fact, I would venture to call it decoupled WordPress.
Yes, that is a thing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, I mean, WordPress is known for being user-friendly, so having a great user experience to input your content and then moving that content elsewhere makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you have a site that, you know, it'll open up things for sites talking to each other. So if you have multiple properties, or even if you just have one site, your publishing site, and you have, like, sports and news and all this, you could actually have a WordPress site with the user experience of entering content customized to each of those folks so they can do their job and then pull that data out of the API into a single front end.
So in the enterprise space, why is WordPress a solution?
I believe it's largely driven by the clients and the end user. If people come in and all of your editors have touched a WordPress blog and that interface is familiar to them, and it's something that you can spin up quickly and easily and get them entering content. And then that's was part of the push for the REST API. If we can then take that content and do whatever we want with it, it's fairly easy to get rolling on a large project and not come up with something custom or something that's unfamiliar to those people who are going to be working in it, entering content day to day.
Familiarity is huge, right? What is WordPress? The paper in front of me says that WordPress is 39% of the internet or something like that. So
yeah, it's tough to come across the client, at least in my experience, that hasn't used WordPress.
Absolutely. So WordPress has a reputation of being cheaper to build out sites than Drupal. Is that a true thing? Is it cheaper to build the same functionality out in WordPress than it would be in Drupal? Or is it a certain functionalities use cases are easier to build out in WordPress, or is that just a misconception?
I think it depends on what kind of site you're trying to build. Earlier we were talking about the default experience when using WordPress Core or Drupal Core, and certainly before Drupal 8, Drupal just offered a lot less out of the box. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a WYSIWYG until Drupal 8. We still don't really have media management, and WordPress has had those for years. So if the thing you're building is an important site that may not be extremely complex, but expects to have a WYSIWYG, most everyone expects a WYSIWYG these days, you expect to have some kind of media management, you can get really far really fast with just WordPress Core. And that wasn't true in Drupal until very recently.
Yeah, but I honestly don't know if that would that tells the whole story, because I mean honestly, you install the CK editor plugin, you install media and a couple other modules, and if you're a Drupal developer, that's not going to take more than a couple hours to do. You know, there has to be something else that makes WordPress cheaper or less.
At least in my experience, for sites with a lot of content types and a lot of fields, configuring something like media module in Drupal 7, at least in the early days of Drupal 7, could take a really long time.
Okay, yeah. So is that it, or is it more of the architecture? I had a thought, and I don't know if this is entirely true. So if I'm if this is false, just like, Mike, you're an idiot. Just come out and say it right here. Mike, my thought.
I was prepping.
My thought was, is that if your website kind of falls within like a certain use case, you know, like we talked about real estate earlier or, you know, something else, is that like a lot of times you can download a pre-made theme and you can download a plugin that will build out most, if not all, of that functionality for you right away. Where in Drupal, if there is no real estate module with Drupal, at least that I know of. And if it is, it's probably not used too much, you know, because in Drupal, what you would do is you would end up building that out yourself using, you know, the field, using the field system, using views, using your display modes and stuff like that. And that's kind of the standard way to do it. Is it true within WordPress that if I'm a realtor, if I want to put up a website, I can just go ahead and maybe download a pre-built theme that looks really pretty with some cool parallax effects and maybe a module, pay $30, hook into the MLS system, and bam, it's working? Is that something that could be true?
Yeah, I think that's true in a lot of cases. And that's where, you know, some agencies will work with folks who need sites that kind of have a similar functionality to each other. So they'll specialize in those niches. So like we do lawyers or we do real estate agents or whatever. And once you have that kind of base framework down, it's easy to create more and more sites with that. I would say that, you know, the same could be said of Drupal. If you spent the time to develop that, those modules and in those configurations and things initially, then you can reuse that. But mm-hmm. with WordPress, if someone comes in and even if you've never worked with a real estate agent, if they say, hey, I have this premium theme I bought, I need to pay you an hour or two to go configure it. That's a lot less than I need you to build me this custom thing from scratch.
It sounds like familiarity with the WordPress plugins is really kind of big if you're going to get into it and customize it and get good with it. I mean, I suppose that same is true with, you know, knowing the inner workings of
Drupal. Yeah, and with knowing what modules to download with Drupal, you know, like the fact that, you know, if I'm building like the flag module, I brought that up earlier, like that's something that, you know, a person coming into Drupal that's brand new is not going to know exists, and they might have a perfect use case for it, but they're not going to know what that does, and they're not, you know, selling flags, so why search for flag?
Because they watch Fun with Flags on YouTube.
Exactly. So kind of coming back to it, like right now, what I've heard so far is that the reason that WordPress is cheaper to build out than Drupal is primarily because of media, but it has to be something else. There has to be something else in here to make maybe WordPress development more rapid, easier, cheaper. Is it the cost of developers? Are Drupal developers more expensive than WordPress developers?
I think there are fewer Drupal developers, and that's again somewhat of a chicken and the egg issue. As WordPress becomes more and more the internet, there are going to be more and more people choosing to develop for it because they can always find work in it. So it is somewhat easier to hire WordPress developers, at least as I've heard anecdotally. And there is as well the fast Drupal install possibility. One of the agencies that uses Pantheon with Drupal is in Resonance out in Western Massachusetts, and they just do school websites. They have basically an install profile that gives them a ton of stock configuration, and they're able to build out sites very fast and for a lot less money than they would if they were building it from scratch. If they were starting from, okay, we're going to download views, we're going to download flag, let's build a website for a school.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I have a friend who does a similar thing here in Gainesville. He has a company that builds out conference websites. And he just kind of, he has a huge multi-site with hundreds of installs and, you know, his base themes and his everything all set up, and that works out pretty well for him. Does WordPress do multi-site?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's commonly referred to as like multi-site or site networks. They're kind of interchangeable. And a really great use case for those are, you know, things where you have multiple sites that are very similar. So if you had a franchise, for example, maybe the corporate entity for that franchise would take care of the website and all the different franchises can opt in which case they would get a site spun up within that corporate site. So if you do zip code search and they can share contact form data and things like that within the same site.
All right, guys, I think we're coming to the end. So we're going to go around the horn and just kind of get some final thoughts, but we're going to do it in a special kind of way. We're going to do the lightning round. I want you to tell me one thing that frustrates you about Drupal and one thing that frustrates you about WordPress. Steve.
Sure. One thing that has frustrated me about WordPress is the support for older versions of PHP and a reluctance to embrace more modern tools like Composer. There certainly are WordPress developers who are building sites with Composer, managing core with Composer, managing their plugins with Composer, but it's not in core the way it is now with Drupal. And as far as Drupal frustrations, one of my main points of frustration had been the pace of core development, and that's been completely alleviated, at least from my perspective, in Drupal 8. Like the core conversation that Andrew and I did at DrupalCon New Orleans, sorry, it was a Horizons track talk. It was lessons from WordPress core, where we talked about how WordPress has scheduled releases every few months. They maintain backwards compatibility. They have a system for organizing major pieces of work to go into each new major version, and we were suggesting that Drupal do more of these things. And there certainly were ideas for that in Drupal, but in the time between we submitted the session and the time the session was accepted, basically all of our suggestions were already in play and moving forward.
Good
and
job.
It's been great. Yeah. I'm sure people just saw our session description and thought, we're going to do all of that.
The best possible outcome.
Andrew, frustrations with Drupal and WordPress?
Yeah, so my biggest frustration with WordPress is the fragmentation of the marketplace, of being able to go to the official repository and get things, or you have clients that went and downloaded something from the random dark black hole of the web, and you have no idea what it's going to do. And then with Drupal, I would say, is being new to Drupal, frustration is lack of backwards compatibility. Like I've worked with, you know, configuration management, some really cool things on Drupal 8. But if I were to dive into a Drupal 7 or Drupal 6 project as a developer, I don't have confidence that the skills I'm going to learn there will transfer over to working with Drupal 8.
Jonathan.
With WordPress, the lack of a standard fields API kills me every single time I need to do anything like that. And sure, download a plugin. But just that fragmentation, that lack of standardization. And with Drupal, it's this is petty, but it's the whole module weights idea. The fact that if I need to register two different hooks for if I needed to register two hook form alters for the same form, that has to go into two different modules. Whereas in WordPress, I can just register two hooks and move on with life. It is the type of thing that'll just get under my skin.
Mike?
WordPress. I honestly don't know much about it. So that's my gripe. Like, I don't know it, you know? So
that means it's hard, right?
Yeah.
You have to complain about it that it's hard because you don't know anything about it. That's how it works.
Yeah. So maybe Drupal, the biggest gripe is that it's harder for newbies to come in there and pick it up, you know? So, for example, you know, with WordPress, I could go and maybe pay, you know, $30 for a theme that has all this functionality that builds all this stuff out. With Drupal, I cannot do that right now. With Drupal, when I open it up out of the box, there's no default content, and hopefully all this is going to be changing soon, but it's very hard to look at out of the box. And Jesus, with it was even worse with Drupal 7, you know, where you couldn't do anything out of the box with Drupal 7, but Drupal 8 is a huge improvement, and I'm excited to see where that goes. And what about you, Matt?
Oh, I was hoping I wasn't going to get asked, because I don't know. I suppose I can get frustrated. I think the pace of development and how much it actually changes when it gets here. But like Steve mentioned, I think some of that might be being resolved with the 8.1, 8.2, you know, the future of how we're developing with Drupal. Mm-hmm. But the big huge jump from 7 to 8 was quite massive.
Yeah.
And as far as learning 8 after having a good base of Drupal experience, there were some challenges there. But I do still think that having that background knowledge of where things were and how they got to where they are is still important. As far as WordPress, yeah, I don't know. I installed it once. It looks okay. I don't know. It's just it's never been into my tool chain, so I guess I'm going back to Dreamweaver because everything sucks. I don't know. Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. Steve and Andrew, anything cool going on at Pantheon you want to mention?
Sure. I'll mention Pantheon office hours. This is something Andrew and I and a few other people on our agency and community team do every Wednesday and Thursday afternoon, where we'll take any questions that arise, often out of our power users group. So we talk about continuous integration, a lot of testing topics. One of the topics we talked about this week was BHAT testing. We use a lot of BHAT, especially for our WordPress plugins and Drupal modules, and it's a question we get a lot from agencies.
Right on. So you said it was when is that? How do you do that?
It's every Wednesday and Thursday afternoon. So if you just Google Pantheon office hours, you'll find us.
Cool. Jonathan, anything cool that you have going on that you want to talk about?
Probably not. Nothing we do is public. Nothing. Yeah. We don't.
Sounds secretive.
We have very atypical, I guess, clients and customers, and it's not involving developers in any way. So, sorry.
All good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Hopefully we can know enough about WordPress to hate it at the end, I guess.